All right, folks, welcome to According to Sam. I bring you this podcast every Monday and Friday. You can get this podcast on audio platforms, wherever you get audio podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you get your audio podcasts through RSS, you'll be able to listen to this podcast every Monday and Friday. And then you can also watch the video version of this podcast on Rumble, on YouTube, on X. And thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you for listening. I have a great show for you guys today. Today, I want to get started with a little Bible, if you don't mind. We're going to start today with Matthew 5, the Gospel of Matthew. And the fifth chapter, we're going to look at Jesus's Sermon on the Mound. This is one of the most famous sermons that Jesus did. If you read through the gospel, people were following Jesus around the area of Judea through his ministry, and he would often stop and give a sermon to the people that were following. And the Sermon of the Mound, again, is the most popular of the sermons that Jesus gave in his ministry. The most popular section and well-known section of this sermon is what is called the Beatitude. The Beatitudes are the nine blesseds that Jesus gives in this sermon. And we're going to focus on the seventh blessed. But let's read through all of them. Starts off, blessed are the pure in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the merciful, because they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God, the pure in heart. And then the one that I want to focus on today are the peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the children of God. And then blessed are those who are persecuted. Not only those who are persecuted. It's not who he's talking about here. A specific persecution. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness. Not just those who are persecuted, but who are persecuted for a specific reason, because of righteousness. For theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then the last blessed. Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Again, it's not only blessed are people who are persecuted and lied about and insulted. Blessed are people who are insulted, persecuted, lied about because of Jesus, is what he says, because of me, for my sake. And then it says, rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven, for the same way they persecuted the prophets who were before you. So rejoice in your persecution if you're persecuted for me. If you're lied about for me, if you're insulted for me, blessed are you in those persecutions. So back to the seventh blessed. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Peacemakers. It doesn't say peace wishers, those who wish peace, or peace hopers, those who hope for peace. It's not a passive, you know, he's not talking about passively, you know, wanting peace or hoping for peace or desiring peace. It's talking about actively making peace, peace makers, people who actively go out and make peace. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. Now, peacemakers are different than war makers, people that go out and create conflict and create strife and create war. Those people are different than people that actively go out and attempt to make peace. And when I think about this, and if you, you know, read through the Bible, the concept of peace is everywhere, everywhere. I think this one, if you look at the eighth blessed here, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteous, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And then Paul says in the book of Romans, he says the kingdom of God is not meat and drink, it's not something that is tangible that you can take in as a substance into your body the way you would food, the way you would drink. It's not, Paul says the kingdom of God is not meat and drink that you take into your body and is physical substance, but that it is righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Ghost. Peace again and righteousness and joy is what Paul is saying there. So this concept of peace throughout Christianity, in and if you read through the scriptures, is everywhere. Not only I'm not only talking about peace and in the concept of the antithesis of war, you know, two armies fighting a war, two nations fighting a war, peace. But a lot of the concepts of peace, like the scripture that I just quoted from Paul in Romans, is about inner peace, having a peaceful disposition. The peacemaker has peace within himself, but that's why he goes out and tries to make peace. And it doesn't only mean making peace again, trying to make peace between nations that are at war, but maybe you have a group of friends and two of the friends are fighting with one another. So the peacemaker actively tries to make peace in that situation, in that friend group. The peacemaker doesn't gossip about one friend and perpetuate the conflict, make the conflict worse. No, the peacemaker tries to make peace in that situation. What maybe it's business partners or something having to do, with coworkers that are fighting, or there's conflict or war. Finding peace in that situation, or making peace, not finding peace, going out and making peace in that situation. That is the idea of the peacemakers. And again, peace is, if you go through the Bible and you look at this concept of peace, it is everywhere. It is a common theme throughout the Bible, not only in Christianity, but also in Judaism. The common greeting, and they use it for departures as well, in the Hebrew language amongst Jews, is shalom. Shalom means peace. But also in Aramaic, the Muslims, they use salam. Peace is what it means. Peace to you. Peace. It's a very common a concept, not only in Christianity, but also in Judaism, also in Islam, is to wish peace and to thrive for peace. And then Jesus says in the Beatitudes, blessed are the peacemakers, for they should be called the children of God. Those who go out and try to create and to make shalom and salam. Those people shall be called the children of God, is what Jesus is talking about there in the Sermon of the Mount. This is the Wikipedia page for Matthew 5:9, blessed are the peacemakers. Just want to read a little bit of this analysis because I thought it was good. The word peacemakers does not imply pacifism. So I'm not talking about pacifism. It doesn't mean that you have to be a passive person and that you don't prepare for war. We all know what the proverb says, that there's a time for war. There's a time for peace. There's a time for everything is what the proverb says. So we understand that there's a time for war, but we don't go out and try to create war. We don't go out and seek war. We don't try to destabilize the world to make war more prevalent. That shouldn't be what godly people should do. But it doesn't mean that you're a pacifist. It means that, yes, you prepare. People have been quoting Ronald Reagan, peace through strength. I think that that is a good policy to live by, that you should be prepared for war. You should be strong and ready when it comes, but you shouldn't be going out creating the circumstances for war. You shouldn't be going out creating the war. What you should be going out making is peace and attempting to make peace in every situation. And if you can't make peace, then you go to war. It says the word peacemakers does not imply pacifism, unlike later sections of the sermon. It does not refer to those who do not fight, but to those who actively bring conflict to an end. It's peacemakers. I'm making peace. It's active. It's not passive. It's not passive at all. So what I want to ask is, is America as a country, are we peacemakers or are we war makers? Do we make peace or do we make war? That's the question I want to ask. Because in Iraq, we made war. There was no reason for us to invade Iraq. The Bush administration invaded Iraq based on 100% lies. They lied to us and told us that Saddam was buying yellow cake uranium from Niger. That wasn't true. They knew it wasn't true. They went on the media and lied to us and told us that they didn't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. So they used the yellow cake uranium lie to accentuate the nuclear threat and told you that the smoking gun was going to be a mushroom cloud. Told us all this, gave us all of this BS intelligence about aluminum tubes and all the lies that Colin Powell told at the Security Council, all in an effort to make war, not to make peace. In 1953, the Iranian coup, the coup d'etat that our CIA did in Iran in 1953, they overthrew a democratically elected prime minister who was Democrat. Iran was a democracy in the Middle East. I love it when people say, well, we have to protect Israel because Israel's the only democracy there. Yes, Israel's the only democracy there because of us, because we overthrew the democratically elected Mohammad Mossadegh in 1953. We made war in that country. And not only did we make war, you can show that how the Iranian Revolution that happened in 1979, the storming of the American embassy, the taking of the hostages, when the Ayatollah came in after the Shah left, he was dying with cancer. But, all of that entire revolution, the entire sentiment against the West and against the United States can all be traced back to the war that we made in that country in 1953. We made that war. We didn't make peace. We made that war. I have a clip here about the 1953 coup in Iran. Just want to play a little bit of this.
If you want to understand the past 70 years of often disastrous U.S. foreign policy and military intervention, look to the 1953 CIA and MI6-backed coup in Iran that removed democratically elected Prime Minister Mohammad Mossadegh and brought back to power the Shah, an authoritarian dictator friendly to U.S. and British interests. The British and Americans didn't anticipate that their interference would ultimately set the stage for an Islamic revolution led by the Ayatollah Khomeini, which began the repressive theocracy that rules Iran to this day.
To this day, that they're telling us that Iran is the new axis of evil. Well, Iran was part of the old axis of evil, but we have a new axis of evil that includes Iran that was included in the old axis, and now they've included Russia and China. But here we are. How much longer are we? So we're 71 years away from this coup d'etat, and we're still dealing with the hostile Iran that we can trace the hostility and the animosity of this conflict, of this ongoing war 70 years later, to the coup d'etat, to the war that the CIA and MI6 started in 1953 to steal these people's oil, that this is the blowback. We're still dealing with the blowback of what these people did today. And we did this. The United States did this in your name. In your name. They set up a coup d'etat in Iran to steal their oil and put the Shah in place because he was more favorable to the West, that built animosity up in Iran. And this is what happened in 1978 or in 1979. I think that they stormed the embassy and took the hostages in 78. And then the hostages were finally released in 1980. But this is all because of what our CIA did in staging the coup. And we've totally destabilized that country. I don't know if you guys have heard about the rapper in Iran that has just been sentenced to death, but this guy's name is Tumaj. They call him the Tupac of Iran. All he does is make rap songs. His songs are used in when the most recent revolution that happened, or wasn't a revolution because nothing changed, but it was a recent uprising in Iran where people were fighting with the police and clashes because they killed a woman in custody because she didn't have her hair covered. This guy wrote songs about it. People were using his songs in the protest. They arrested him because he made these songs, and now they have sentenced him to die because of his music. We did this. We made that country the way that it was, that it is right now. We destabilized Iran when we overthrew the democratically elected prime minister. That's why they had the revolution in 1979, and now they are a dangerous theocracy because of what we did. We made war there. We made war. I want you to listen to this guy talk a little bit about this rapper. And he wonders why all the protests, all the people protesting at the colleges, the University of Texas, they're at Yale, they're at Columbia, they're at USC. I saw him at in Arizona. They're at all the colleges protesting what's going on in Israel. None of them are talking about this rapper that's getting ready to be hung in Iran for his songs. Very interesting.
So the pro-humanitarian, pro-Palestinian side is super silent about this. People that were just praising Iran are silent about this. Tumaj Salehi is a rapper in Iran. He's commonly referred to as the Tupac of Iran. He has been sentenced to be hung from a crane, sentenced to death, for making rap music. Is that really what it's about? You may recognize him after his protest, Mahsa Amini. This is the young Kurdish woman who was arrested by the morality police and beaten to death. Why was she arrested? Because she had a few pieces of hair sticking out. The morality police arrested her. The morality police. He was arrested for spreading lies and propaganda, even though he was telling the truth. And now, because he makes rap music, he's being sentenced to death. A lynching. A literal lynching in 2024. And what does the pro-humanitarian, human rights side have to say?
Nothing. They don't even know. They don't even know because our media is not reporting on this. But we did this to Iran. I mean, of course, going back to the 50s, even under the Shah, there's videos of women on the Caspian Sea in bikinis, enjoying life. They identified with the West, but even before the Shah, just think about, you know, what could have happened to Iran if we wouldn't have staged a coup in their country and wouldn't have meddled in their country the way we did, not only in Iran, in many other countries. We do not make peace. The United States are not peacemakers. We make war and we go out and make war so we can sell weapons to both sides of the war oftentimes, and instead of being peacemakers, we're war makers for profit, for the profit motive. How can we be a godly people? How can you think that America is a godly nation or a Christian nation when we go out and we make war for profit so we can sell arms to people so the military-industrial complex in America can make money? We're not a godly people. We're not a decent people. We're not a people that can be called the children of God. No. No. We make war. We do not make peace, and we've been doing it for a long time. Now, I've been on Mitch McConnell. Talked about it. I did the podcast about the isolationists. I guess it was 2 weeks ago. We talked about McConnell trying to call out Tucker Carlson. In the last podcast, he doubled down. He was on two Sunday shows this week. He went on Meet the Press and Face the Nation. And all he wanted to talk about with this was this isolationist. And he's really, this old man is really prepared to go to war with people in the Republican Party like me, people who are America first, people who don't want to make war, who don't care about the profit motive, who don't care about the military-industrial complex, adding all this money to our GDP and the jobs that it creates. None of that stuff matters to me and to people like me because we're peacemakers. We want peace. So this guy really wants to go. Mitch McConnell is going to make this his mission in his last days. He was on, again, Meet the Press and Face the Nations. I have a few clips from both of these interviews. I want you to listen to Mitch McConnell.
I think we need to stick with him. I think it's important to us. Look at all the good things that have happened.
Look at the good things. Look at the good things that have happened to us because of, he's talking about the Ukraine war. Now, much like Iran, the reason that the war in Ukraine is happening is because of our meddling. We meddled in Ukraine just like we meddled in Iran in 1953. We destabilized Ukraine by our actions. What the Obama administration did, what the CIA did, what members of your party and your caucus in the Senate, people like John McCain, people like Lindsey Graham, people like Amy Klobuchar, going over to Ukraine, meddling in their business. That's the reason that Ukraine is in the situation that it's in. Ukraine is in the situation that it's in, not because we went over to Ukraine to make peace. These are all people in your caucus there. With Petro Poroshenko here in the middle. This was Lindsey Graham. He's in your caucus. He's one of your colleagues, Mitch McConnell. This is John McCain. He's dead now, but he was in your caucus with you, Mitch McConnell. This is Amy Klobuchar. She's not in your caucus, but she's in your body in the Senate, and this, she's one of your colleagues, Amy Klobuchar. They were over there meddling. This is 2016, but I'll show you the video. I don't have time to show you the video of John McCain and what's his name from Connecticut. Christopher Murphy over in 2014, stirring them up during the Maidan coup. We were meddling. That's what was going on. In front of our eyes, who knows what the CIA was doing and John Brennan was doing behind the scenes. I mean, that's, we'll find all that out later, but like the information that we got from the Iranian coup, we didn't find out for sure about Operation Ajax until, the Obama administration. So may take us some time to figure out exactly what John Brennan and the coup, or John Brennan and the CIA were doing in Ukraine. But we already know what these guys, your colleagues, were doing, Mitch McConnell. So I just want to point that out. Let's listen to more Mitch McConnell here.
Important to us. Look at all the good things that have happened to us as a result of this. Most of the money's being spent in the U.S. in 38 different states.
Profit motive. Most of the money's being spent. He doesn't care about all the people dying in Ukraine. People are dying. He doesn't care about the region being destabilized. He doesn't care about what the problems are going to be 70 years from now, like in 1953. The people who staged the coup in Iran, they're not here dealing with the problems of Iran now that they're a dangerous theocracy ruled by the mullahs. This guy doesn't know what's going to happen to Ukraine 70 years from now. Only thing he cares about is the fact that in 38 different districts that the military-industrial complex is building weapons and we're making a bunch of money. This war maker, he's not interested in making peace. He's interested in making a war so we can make all this money in the military-industrial complex is ultimately what this guy's saying.
It's important to us. Look at all the good things that have happened to us as a result of this. Most of the money's being spent in the U.S. in 38 different states. The Europeans have stepped up. We've got two new members of NATO. The Prime Minister of Japan here a couple of weeks ago spent a lot of time talking about Ukraine. And he had previously said, if you want to send President Xi a message, beat Putin in Ukraine. This is a worldwide problem. It's not going to go away after one supplemental.
It's a worldwide problem that's not going to go away after one supplemental. What does that tell you? That tells you what I told you in the last podcast, that if you think that this $61 billion, who this guy said, it's not a whole lot of money. It's not a whole lot of money is what he said in the clip that I played from you last week, $61 billion. It's only 0.2% of our gross domestic product. And I told you, they're going to be back for more. And that's what he means, that this problem's not going to go away with just one supplemental. There will be many more supplementals. There's going to be a lot more money going to Ukraine because it's all about that profit motive. Here's another clip. Let's listen.
I want to ask you about your legacy. You said just this week that you often feel like the only Reagan Republican left. As you prepare to step down from your leadership position this year, what are your greatest concerns about the future of the Republican Party?
Well, I tell you, I feel better about it after we had our vote. I don't know when I said that. It may have been before the vote, but I do think peace through strength, which is the Reagan formula, which is the Eisenhower formula, and not the Robert Taft isolationism back in the 40s, is recovering. And I think in this episode, more of my members really focused on the facts.
No, they didn't.
And it's hard to argue against the supplemental. It's
easy.
In our interest. This is not charity to Ukraine. It's in our interest. And I think we've sort of refocused on the importance of playing the kind of role that we need to play in the world.
We're destabilizing the world. We're destabilizing the world. We're making war in the world. That's what we're doing. That's the role that we're playing in the world. It doesn't matter if it's Iran, if it's Guatemala, if it's Libya, if it's Iraq, if it's Syria, if it's Yemen, if it's Sudan. It doesn't matter if it's Central America, South America. Our job in this world, what we're doing in this world, is making war. We're not peacemakers. We're war makers. And we're going around and we're making war for profit motives. So we can go around and steal people's natural resources and to sell them arms. And I'm sorry, but you don't want to hear that. That's the truth of the matter. 100% the truth of the matter. That, let's just listen to a little bit more of Mitch McConnell here, because I'm going to prove what I'm saying to you. I'm not, I love this country. I'm not anti-America. I want America to be better. I want us to be better. I'm not hating on America. I'm hating on these people. These people that have been very destructive to the United States of America, to this country that I love. They've gone around and they've made the world a much more dangerous place for the reason so they can go around and sell weapons and make money. And that's the only thing that they care about. So that's what I'm speaking against. I'm not speaking against the United States of America. I'm speaking against these individuals, this group of individuals who have destabilized the world over the last 70 years and made the world more dangerous for profit. That's who I'm speaking against. Let's listen to a little bit more of Mitch McConnell here.
None of this is charity. The whole democratic world is in favor of what we did this week. That should get the attention of our members. Plus, all the jobs that are being created.
All
in
the
their
jobs.
States.
All those jobs. Plus, all those jobs. Blessed are the peacemakers. But all the jobs. Can we make a little bit of war for all the jobs? All that money? Look at him, he's giddy. Oh, look at all these jobs that we're making off of making war. That's what the jobs are associated with, Mitch McConnell, making war, and the war that we have gone around the world and created. I don't want jobs. I don't want an economy. I don't want a country. I don't want to live in a country that goes around and makes war. I want to live in a country that is decent. I want to live in a country of righteous people. I want to live in a country of people that attempt to make peace, not people that go and make war for a profit motive.
That should get the attention of our members. Plus, all the jobs that are being created in their states.
All the jobs.
With the money that we're spending retooling our industrial base for the big challenges ahead against China.
Retooling our industrial base. What's the industrial base, people? The military industrial complex. That's what he's talking about. Same thing Eisenhower was talking. This was Face the Nation. He was on both of these Sunday shows and, telling the same story. I mean, this is all about isolationism and rooting out these isolationists in the Republican Party. Good luck.
I want to move on to Ukraine. I understand you just hung up with Ukraine's President Zelensky. The U.S. has shipped him capabilities, including these long-range missiles, as part of this new congressional aid package. What did he say to you? Does he need more specific weapons in the immediate term?
Well, one of the things I apologize for is it's taken too long.
So this guy apologized to Zelensky Oh, I'm sorry, Zelensky, that it took so long. He was on the phone with them. Oh, I'm sorry. Those isolationists in my party made this money take so long.
One of the things I apologize for is it's taken too long. If you go back to the beginning of this administration, even though I supported, obviously, this supplemental request and worked hard to get Republican votes for it, this all started with the precipitous withdrawal from Afghanistan.
So he's against the withdrawal, and he says this a couple of times. We talked about Afghanistan a little bit in the last podcast. He was against the withdrawal from Afghanistan. We were there for 20 years. We spent $2 trillion. There was no end in sight, and he's saying that that was the beginning of the mistakes, is that we withdrew from Afghanistan.
This all started with the precipitous withdrawal from Afghanistan. Like sending out a green light to all the rogue regimes around the world that the Americans are going home.
Not to mention that he's lying.
Not giving the Ukrainians what they need soon enough. Didn't just start with this administration. I remember the Obama administration sent them meals ready to eat.
Yeah, the Obama administration, and this is funny, he says that it didn't just start with this administration. The Obama administration only sent them, you know, meals and blankets and humanity. Yeah, that's all Obama was able to send because Congress had blocked Obama from sending them anything else. Reason the Obama administration only sent them blankets and meals, Mitch McConnell, I don't know if you know this, but Ukraine's neo-Nazis won't get U.S. money. The reason that Obama couldn't send them any more than blankets and meal packages is because Congress blocked them from sending anything else because they were Nazis, neo-Nazis. All right. So I don't know if you know that, Mitch McConnell, but the reason that Obama only sent them blankets is because Congress didn't want to send Nazis weapons, which you seem more than happy to send.
Administration. I remember the Obama administration sent them meals ready to eat. That's not exactly a way to defend yourself.
Following the 2014 partial invasion.
Yeah. So it's gradually gotten better. The administration's still been self-deterring themselves with some fear that the Russians would be deterred by our lack of action. So my main complaint is let's get the weapons there as quickly as possible. I apologize for how long it took Congress to do its part, but we finally did. And he was also impressed by the fact that Republican support grew in the Senate substantially, substantially.
Substantially.
Because you were whipping those votes.
Absolutely. He whipped the votes. Absolutely, he whipped the votes. Let me tell you about what's going on here. So I think it was two podcasts ago, I was explaining how a majority of Republicans voted against the foreign aid package for Ukraine in the House of Representatives. It was like 101 to 112, about a dozen more Republicans voted against the package in the House of Representatives. And I explained how when the Senate voted on this package in February, more Republicans voted against it in the Senate than voted for it. So this guy understood that. He understood the optics of that, because one thing this old man is sharp. So he understood the optics of more Republicans voting against it in the House of Representatives, and the fact that more Republican senators voted against it back in February. So this guy went to work whipping together these votes to get, he got nine of the Republicans that voted against it in February. He whipped them around to voting for it last week. Who knows if he used carrots or if he used sticks, probably a combination of both. But this guy, he was not going to have more Republicans vote against this foreign aid bill again, like what happened in February. And he was able to get four Republican senators to change their vote So that's what he's talking about and what she's talking about here.
So impressed by the fact that Republican support grew in the Senate substantially. Substantial.
9 votes, buddy.
Because you were whipping those votes. You convinced 9 additional senators.
It wasn't something I felt lightly about, let's put it that way.
But who did you feel you were apologizing for?
The slowness of it.
But that wasn't in the Senate.
I'm sorry?
The slowness was not in the Senate. Were you apologizing for House Republicans?
No, it was in the Senate. We spent about 4 months trying to agree to a deal to deal with our own border with Mexico, which is a disaster.
You hear what he's saying? We wasted time trying to negotiate a border deal in this foreign aid deal. That was our mistake. This is what this guy's saying, that we shouldn't have even been debating about the border because this foreign aid was so important that we should have just passed the foreign aid without having a debate about the border. This is what he's saying.
With Mexico, which is a disaster. And initially, obviously, to make a law, you have to deal with the other side. They've got the White House, they've got the Senate. We came up with a proposal. It was, my members felt, many of them, were not good enough. Our nominee for president seemed to be unenthusiastic about acting on that. And so that took 3 or 4 months. Once we realized we were not going to be able to legislate on the border, mm-hmm. we bored in on the subject of the supplemental. And I think a number of my members focusing on that changed their mind. And we grew from 22 to actually 32. One member missed the last vote, but would have voted for it.
You mentioned the border. You had empowered Senator Lankford to come to this bipartisan deal with the White
House. All right. So I have one more clip. I want you to listen to this one. This is from Face the Nation.
You're more aligned with Joe Biden than Donald Trump, in your view.
I thought this question was great. She says that you're more aligned with Joe Biden, not only than Donald Trump, than with the majority of the Republican base. You're more aligned with Joe Biden than you are with Republicans when it comes to foreign aid and Ukraine. Why is that? Why is it that you're so aligned with the Democrats and Joe Biden? The Democrats, who mostly all of them voted for Ukraine aid in the Senate, the 3 that voted against it in February also voted against it last week. The 1 in Oregon and then the 2 senators from Vermont all voted against it. But everyone else in the Democratic caucus in the Senate voted for Ukraine aid. Every single Democrat in the House of Representatives, not one voted against it. Every single one voted for it in the House of Representatives. Joe Biden wants it. It's been Joe Biden's agenda going back to when he was vice president in 2014. This is his agenda, and you're aligned with his agenda. Why are you more aligned with Joe Biden's foreign policy agenda, Mitch McConnell? Answer us that.
You're more aligned with Joe Biden than Donald Trump, in your view, of America's role in the world, it would seem.
It would seem. It is true.
I'm sorry. What?
She said that you're in line with Joe Biden, buddy. That you're passing Joe Biden's agenda. That you're more in line with Joe Biden than you are with the isolationists within your own party.
Trump, in your view, of America's role in the world, it would seem.
I'm sorry. What do you?
Your worldview seems more aligned with Joe Biden when it comes to American leadership in these global conflicts than with Donald Trump.
You're with Joe Biden. You're with Joe Biden,
who has not endorsed the package that you just worked so hard to get over the finish line.
Look, I wouldn't have withdrawn from Afghanistan. I wouldn't have submitted 4 budgets in a row for defense that don't even keep up with inflation. I got plenty of differences with the current administration. Whether I will have differences with the next administration remains to be seen. And so I'm not going to predict what might happen on this issue. I know what I think, and it doesn't make any difference what the outcome of the presidential election is. I'm going to be focusing on this for the remainder of my time in the Senate.
But this has to be something that you think a lot about and struggle with. Donald Trump comes after you personally. He's come after your wife.
Well, it's not about me. It's about what the right thing to do for the country is.
Yeah, making peace is the right thing.
The country. As a Republican leader here, one of the most powerful in the country.
This is the right thing to do for the country, and that's what I'm advocating.
No, making peace is the right thing. Being peacemakers, not making war, not creating situations to accelerate war, to increase war, to make war more inevitable. That's not the right thing to do for a decent, righteous people, a people that consider themselves a godly people. That's not the right thing to do. Making peace is the right thing to do, Mitch. Sorry.
The right thing to do for the country, and that's what I'm advocating. No matter who gets elected president, I'm going to be pushing what I've said repeatedly.
You're going to be pushing war. Pushing war.
It's for an increase in defense budget.
Yeah, pushing war.
Take seriously.
More money.
China, Russia, and Iran. And that requires more defense spending.
My money.
What I hear you saying, tell me if I'm getting it wrong, is that you can stop Donald Trump if he's commander in chief. Even if you're not leader, you're going to do the most you can to counter this isolationist worldview and to counter or limit what he could do if reelected.
I'm going to counter, no matter who's elected president, advocating things that I think are not good for America.
War. You're going to be advocating for war.
To one or another will depend on who the president is and what they advocate.
Well, let me tell you what Donald Trump, this is what Donald Trump advocates. Listen to Donald Trump right here. This is what he's advocating.
I want to stop wars. I want to stop the war in Ukraine with Russia. I want to stop what's happening in Israel.
That's what he's advocating. Donald Trump seems to be advocating making peace. That's what he's talking about. I want to stop the war in Ukraine. I want to stop what's going on in Israel and Gaza. I don't hear you talking about that. Only thing I hear you talking about is making war. A war maker. Donald Trump sounds like a peacemaker, and you and Joe Biden and all the Democrats and the Republicans, like the Mikes, Mike Turner, Michael McCall, Mike Lawler, Mike Johnson, Mike Pence, all the Mikes and all the Democrats and Joe Biden and you, I hear you all talking about war. I don't hear any of you ever talking about peace, about making peace, about bringing an end to these wars. The only person that I hear talking about bringing an end to these wars and stopping these wars is Donald Trump, saying that he wants to bring an end to these wars.
I want to stop wars. I want to stop the war in Ukraine with Russia. I want to stop what's happening in Israel.
So, I mean, you may not believe that Donald Trump has the ability to stop these wars, and it may be very difficult for him to do that. And you may even doubt his sincerity, but at least he's talking about it. At least he's advocating for peace and making peace instead of making war that you're talking about, Mitch McConnell.
Pains are pretty vociferous, and what I care about is what does the person who actually gets elected ultimately do? And I've made it perfectly clear, right, as we've discussed over and over and over again, where my interests are and where my advocacy will be.
Should he go to Kyiv like you did? Should Mr. Trump, as candidate, as representative of your party, go and see Ukraine for himself?
I'm not going to give him any advice. I'm trying.
Other Republican candidates who are racing against him,
cares.
They did that.
Oh, I'm not going over there.
You did that. You put your own life at risk. You
Margaret,
went and saw.
I don't know how many times I have to tell you. I'm focusing on turning the Senate Republicans into the majority here and focusing on advocating, as I think I successfully did this very week, for moving away from the isolationist movement that began with Tucker Carlson.
And he doubles down and says it begins with Tucker Carlson, which I think is so stupid.
It began with Tucker Carlson.
It did. He has a huge. He had a huge audience among rank and file Republicans, and I think it was very destructive, very impactful on regular Republican voters, and created a big problem.
I think that this is so interesting that this guy wants to blame Tucker Carlson too. It is just. It's completely, completely ridiculous. Like, Republican voters, I was looking at this poll. We talked about it in the last podcast, the Monmouth University poll, and just about a week ago, not even a week ago, I think it was like 6 days ago. It says date right here, April 18th through the 22nd is when they ran this poll. And this was after the House of Representatives had passed this this security aid package, foreign aid package. And they were asking the question if people support the foreign aid package. Are you in favor or are you opposed? And as I was showing you in the last podcast, 43% in this poll are in favor. That's 4 in 10 is what it says here. You know, that's less than 50% of the country who are in favor of the foreign aid package, 35% opposed. But I was showing, you know, when you break it down as far as party goes, 65% of Democrats support the foreign aid, but 30% of Republicans, 36% of independents. Tell me this, people. Why do you think twice as many Democrats support foreign aid as Republicans, or twice as many, nearly twice as many Democrats as independents are in favor? Why only 14% of Democrats are opposed to foreign aid, and 45% of independents and 44% Republicans? I mean, that's almost, what is that? Three times as many independents and Republicans as Democrats opposed. Why do you think these numbers are so different? I mean, so Republicans are also, and independents are obviously getting different information about this foreign aid than what these Democrats are getting. I mean, if these Democrats, if the number of Democrats wasn't so high, if it wasn't 65%, the average number of total in favor would be lower than even 40%. And another thing that I think is interesting about this is that 43% is around, within a margin of error of what Joe Biden's approval rating is, around 43, between 48 and 43% is what his approval rating is. So I thought that that was very interesting. But this is where the majority of that support is coming from. 65% of Democrats. What information are they getting, and where are they getting their information from that makes them twice as likely than Republicans to support and to be in favor of this foreign aid? And then I started to think about this clip from the Bill Maher show. This was during COVID. And Bill Maher gave this monologue about how misinformed Democrats were on COVID. I want you to take a listen to this.
But what about liberals? You know, the high information by the science people. In a recent Gallup survey, Democrats did much worse than Republicans in getting the right answer to the fundamental question, what are the chances that someone who gets COVID will need to be hospitalized? The answer is between 1 and 5%. 41% of Democrats thought it was over 50%. Another 28% put the chances at 20 to 49. So almost 70% of Democrats are wildly off. on this key question and also have a greatly exaggerated view of the danger of COVID-2 and the mortality rate among children.
So he goes on and says that it's because of the media, that liberal media was scaring the hell out of these Democrat voters. They watch MSNBC, they watch all the mainstream media, and they were misinformed about COVID. And that's why the numbers that they believed about people who got COVID and had to be hospitalized were drastically off from what the reality was. So I started looking at this polling about foreign aid, and I started to think, I bet you Democrats' information about what's actually happened in Ukraine, how the war started, what's gone on there over the last 10 years, everything that I've explained to you over the past 2 months on this podcast about the details about what is happening in Ukraine, our involvement, and you know, everything going on there, that the Democrats on the reality are probably the least informed. And yes, Tucker Carlson played a part in informing Republicans, Mitch McConnell, but it's not Tucker Carlson's fault that Republicans have different information and are, quite frankly, better informed on Ukraine than Democrats. Republicans had to get a crash course in Ukraine because, remember, the Democrats tried to impeach Donald Trump, the president of the United States, for a phone call that he had with the president of Ukraine, all having to do with funding Ukraine. They impeached him in the Senate, in your body. There was a trial. We had a crash course on Ukraine. We know about the biolabs because the biolabs were testified in a Senate hearing. In a Senate hearing, they brought up the biolabs. We know about the CIA and the coup. We know about Joe Biden and his son working for Burisma. We know, you know, all this stuff. It's not Tucker Carlson that turned Republicans against Ukraine. It's knowing what happened in Ukraine and how the war in Ukraine started and us over there meddling, making war and creating a situation for war so we can sell arms. We know that. That's why we turned against Ukraine, not because of Tucker Carlson. I'm sorry. I have a few more minutes here. I want to play J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance is a colleague of Mitch McConnell's in the Senate. He is one of the 15 Republicans that voted for or voted against the foreign aid package back in February, and he kept his vote last week and voted against it as well. He was only one of 15 Republicans in the Senate who voted no on the package. I want you to listen to a little bit of J.D. Vance from Ohio.
And some of the very people who shipped America's manufacturing base overseas to China in the first place, who weakened our ability to manufacture our own weapons, are now the same people who are saying we can get involved in three wars at once. The math doesn't make sense. We're stretched too thin. We've got to focus. And the last point I'll make on this is, if we focus on East Asia, if we focus on containing the Chinese, the Europeans can step up in Europe. Germany still, after Donald Trump demanded it, still doesn't spend 2% of GDP on defense. A lot of the NATO countries have allowed their own industrial might to atrophy. So why are Americans subsidizing European security? We should be focused on our own problems, and that's mostly China.
Okay.
And some of the very...
So we should be focused on our own problems. We should not be subsidizing Europe. It takes away our focus. I don't care about the financial benefit, through GDP, and the jobs in 28 states and all the money that's being made for these military contractors. I don't care about any of that. I'm a peacemaker. I want to make peace. I want to strive for peace. And sometimes peace isn't always always available. Sometimes you have to go to war. There's a time for peace. There's a time for war. Okay. But we should not be going out like what our CIA has been doing for 70 years and what they did in Ukraine. We should not be going out making war. We should be peacemakers and not war makers. interesting thing that happened this last week too. I told you guys that the $61 billion that we just passed to send to Ukraine is not the end. They're going to be coming back for more money. And you just heard Mitch McConnell say in one of the clips that I played that this isn't problem's not going to go away with one emergency supplemental. There's going to be more supplementals. There's going to be more aid. And this article in Reuters came out just yesterday. Ukraine's $61 billion lifeline is not enough. It's not enough. There's going to be more. How much more? That's going to depend upon you. How much of this you are going to stand for? And if you're supporting this, then I don't know what to say. Zelensky came out yesterday and said, Zelensky says, U.S. is working on 10-year fixed aid plan. A 10-year fixed aid plan. So what? You guys going to keep this war going on for another 10 years? 20 years? You're going to make it another Afghanistan? Again, look at what Iran is 70 years later and the blowback because of what we did in Iran in 1953. Where is Ukraine going to be 70 years from now because of our involvement, our meddling, what we did there? We made war. And that's who we are. All right, folks. Well, that's the podcast. I will be back on Friday. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I still had a little bit more that I wanted to talk about as far as the 1960s and how I think that relates to what's going on in this right now in this military industrial complex. Anyway, we'll talk more about it on Friday, and hope you guys have a great week.